King Kong and a Giant Plant menace theaters, a costume nerd stabs Drew Barrymore, and Robin Williams comes back to life this week in 30-2010.
30-2010, here we go again. Analyzing decades, sitting with our friends, those were different days. And there's so much to say.
Welcome to nearly the last episode of 2016.
Yeah. Almost there.
For 30-2010, a weekly look back at movies, music, TV, and games, and other news-related items. Looking back at 1986, 96, and 2006, week by week, this is the week period of December 16th through the 22nd.
Mm-mm, we're almost there.
I'm one of your hosts, Bort Alston.
I'm Christmas Antista.
I'm Dave Icarus Rudden.
Diana the Dentist Goodman.
Oh, I forgot. I should use Sled Belston. That's my business.
Sled Belston.
Yes.
Sled Belston.
My Twitter name from basically, October 1st till like January 1st is a goofball stupid thing the whole time.
I really wish Twitter would keep track of those so I can go back to some of them, but I can't remember what I do one year after the other.
I don't remember, dude. But movies this week.
You're in a real NPR tone. Hold on. You chug a beer and bring this back up.
December 16th to the 22nd. Movies in the theater this week in 86. Lady and the Tramp re-release.
Oh, listen, I found a trailer from that.
This Christmas season, Walt Disney Pictures unwraps a very special holiday treat. Lady and the Tramp. She's a lucky little lady who's been catered to, pampered, and indulged. He's a wild and carefree rascal, totally independent, always into mischief. She's a little angel.
What's gonna happen?
He's full of the devil.
All right.
Wow.
I love this movie. This movie's great. It was 1955, Lady and the Tramp. Right. Beautiful. I did the first Disney movie to imply raw sex, baby. The lady stays over at the tramp's house, wakes up, and like, I'm gonna get in real big trouble.
They do it tramp style.
They do. They do it people style, actually. Which is alone.
No eye contact. No.
The movie great has probably the best depiction ever of Italians, and I can say that. Chris Antista, thank you very much. Mr. Cucurabonza himself.
How about Asians? Are you going to go for them too? And
oh, God.
Speak on their behalf?
Asians aren't cats, Diana. We've settled this a billion times.
Is this We Are Siamese?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
If you please.
Oh, those rescuers.
They are Siamese cats. I don't know what the problem is.
We still call them Siamese. We didn't change it to update it. It should be Thailand cats.
Thailand cats.
Yeah. So Thai cats.
So two Disney animated movies with racial issues got re-released this year?
Yes.
Didn't we just
every Disney... The list doesn't end, different times. Either you can get past that or don't watch it.
But depending on how thinly you want to slice that pie, you could probably go forward.
Why didn't everybody in the 40s think like me? They should be woke, too. We'll wake them out of their graves and tell them that.
What was going on with Disney that they had to re-release so many things at this point?
They were sucking? Right.
Well, because home video also wasn't really a thing.
Yeah. No. It's because will say that is the beauty of all animation, because as a kid, I had no idea when... Lady and the Tramp's one of their only movies set in the time they made it. How would I know that as a kid in the 80s? It just looks like two dogs who are friends and people barely matter.
During the era of free dog love.
Yeah, well, you can't release a movie from the 1950s in 1986 because it'll look like a 1950s movie and sound like one, whereas cartoons do not. They last forever, and it's why all this room is covered in timeless animation horse shit. The Simpsons, I don't need to make this argument any further, do I?
Mm-hmm. Yes, no. The Ewoks cartoon set is definitely
definitely
timeless.
Okay, the one exception to the rule.
And this week's slate of movies is very 1950s-y. Now that I'm looking
King Kong Lives. So this trailer sets it up for us.
I just want to point out, Crimes of the Heart was a Dino De Laurentiis production too. Mm. Like that dude was all over this decade.
Oh yeah. Well, this whole 80s segment of this show this year has been him. Yep.
Hey, King Kong suffers a crime of the heart.
America's biggest hero is back.
What?
And he is not happy. King Kong Lives.
So, you know more about this movie than I do.
Well, I got
He's not American. American.
Well, King, he's not American, no. And if both first movies, he's not a hero. He's no. He doesn't have a Godzilla moment where he saves a city from anything.
No. No. The closest thing is the, I don't know where to start with King Kong versus Godzilla. What a story. Mm-hmm. But he's kind of the hero in that, but he still tears shit up, so it's like, and grows 900 feet, but it doesn't matter.
Does he not at least fall in love with some lady in a window in this movie?
Like, he falls in love with a lady gorilla.
He'll never work in this
lady
town
King
again.
Kong.
And Linda Hamilton, I think,
Hamilton.
Is the woman?
Yes,
yeah.
Linda Hamilton is in this. So I got this as a Christmas present on VHS because I was super into
you
Godzilla. And my parents at the time, I mean, like classic parent gift of probably 89 is when I got this.
Sounds
on
like
VHS.
I knew you pretty well.
And it's like, I don't know, King Kong's the same thing, right? And here's King Kong Lives. And I remember like unwrapping it. Yeah, it's like 8 years old and be like, Kong is stupid.
Like, oh, I thought you liked this movie.
No, I mean, I watched it, and like I remember it being surprisingly mean-spirited and kind of violent.
There's one shot in that trailer of like a giant King Kong-sized real arms like flying through the jungle after people. It looks really cool.
Is this the one that they based the Universal Studios ride off of?
Sort of,
that?
Yes. Okay. The 77 one a little more so, but that was like the resurrection of King Kong and him as a robot that started
and,
there.
They built a life-size Kong or Mrs. Kong or something like that. And then the last scene is like a baby Kong being born. And it's like there's something about that like, almost to scale, right? Like there's a kind of a... Huh. As famous as it could be, a final scene where, like, a baby is born. And
oh, it's a regular-sized gorilla?
It's like a regular-sized gorilla or something, but then they built, like, I swear, it's like a life-size. Like, if King Kong were real, he'd be this big.
They did in the
And it doesn't
movie,
do anything.
But I thought this one had a significantly lower budget. Sorry, I didn't do a lot of research on this. I thought you had it. Because we talked about it before. It has a really weird ending where people get shot. Do both the gorillas get shot?
I think everybody dies.
Everybody
like,
dies?
It's such a weird movie. Yeah. No, I think it ends with King Kong dies, but... despite the movie's title.
He lives on through sperm.
Despite the movie's title being that he lives. In fact, he does not. But
Mr. Simpson, this is the most flagrant case of false advertising since the never-ending story.
But, yeah,
and
it's
Final
like,
Fantasy.
But, yeah, it's... I just remember watching it and, like, not caring much, and I probably watched it twice on VHS, and it's probably still sitting in my parents' house somewhere.
Is the ending that the baby lives?
The baby is born at the very end, and then I think the woman Kong lives.
Yeah, okay.
With the baby.
So it's not a complete Planet of the Apes.
No, yeah,
right. She lives peacefully with Kong in the jungle as Richard Kong dies.
Okay, so
returning to Borneo, which is where they're from, apparently.
What? So King Kong lives in our hearts.
Yes. And had a video game released by Konami
and the hearts of his family. That's lovely.
It was an inside job. 30 years later, Harambe would be shot.
Coincidence?
Wait, when was this movie made? before we get to the big fun one, we also have No Mercy. Richard Gere and Kim Basinger.
I didn't even bother looking into it.
I vaguely remember that I thought it was like a thriller, and that they're on the run from the mob. I think there's some double crossing, and maybe she's a mob. It's hard to Google because you really have better specify the year because freaking wrestling. Thanks, Dave.
No,
I
will.
I heard they made this into a great Nintendo 64 game.
Fuck that. I'll say that title is so shitty and generic.
Yeah.
Here's a pop quiz. Name one movie you couldn't call No Mercy.
Dogs Go to Heaven.
What? That
there's no mercy for
Lord
the dogs.
Lord literally shows mercy on him. Like
My Dinner with
No
Andre?
Mercy, though.
Yes, but for a while until he redeems himself. You can call any movie No Mercy.
Then there's eventually mercy.
Maybe Kiona Scotsi.
Batman.
No, that works too.
Batman and Robin.
No.
Every movie can be called No Mercy. Never call anything that
Lady
again.
And the Tramp?
Yes! No mercy on Siamese cats.
Who is merciless in that? But that's not the theme of the movie.
Just
is about
saying.
Their movie. Ninja
It's
Turtles.
A bullshit. They showed No Mercy on Shredder.
It's an accident.
They kill him twice.
But then also out to Ollie Stone with his Yell at the Sky.
This is a great trailer.
Now in the spirit of the season, start shopping!
I'm not taking that out. That's too good. Fucking crusty interrupting
in a movie. In 1967, Oliver Stone was a combat infantryman in Vietnam. During his tour, he received a Bronze Star for gallantry. 10 years later, in Hollywood, he was picking up an Oscar for the screenplay of Midnight Express.
You're gonna pick up my Oscar?
Now he has another story to tell. A movie that grew out of his own experience. Stone has come a long way from Vietnam, but he has not left it behind.
Platoon,
one of the few Oscar-winning games to have its own NES game.
Oscar-winning movies to have its own game.
And a great Wii U game. No, wait, that's Splatoon.
Yes. Platoon, and I love that music in it, and I start laughing. Forgetting that music originated in Platoon.
Well, it predates it.
Oh, sorry, D.
It's Barber's Adagio for Strings, which they actually did some sort of scientific research and found it's the saddest music that's ever been. It actually, like, there's something about it that just, it hits this note of, like, human suffering. It's the saddest music there is, yeah.
So how would you distinguish this from the many other Vietnam movies?
I don't know that I can, other than the people in it. Like, right, Tom Berenger. No, Charlie Sheen's not in this.
Yes, he is.
Oh, he is, yes.
He's kind of the lead. Christ.
Sorry. Well, Keith David is the only one I care about. And of Tom Berenger.
Yep.
Because he has all the memorable lines.
I give you two people that have, like, one or two lines each, though.
Who?
Johnny Depp. And John C. Reilly.
Wow, yeah. Wow.
John C. Reilly's baby in this.
Willem kind Dafoe. Of like Young Guns in Vietnam.
That music plays when Willem Dafoe dies with his arms raised in the air, which is the cover of the NES game.
Of everything, yeah.
But we talked about that way earlier in the year in 2010. Oliver Stone released the movie Salvador, and this movie kicked the shit out of his own film. It won everybody an Oscar, basically.
Best Picture. Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
You had like 12 nominations.
Yep. Yeah, I don't think any of the actors won. Though.
No.
I can't imagine Tom Berenger as an Oscar.
No, he better not.
He's so good in it, though.
And Sniper 2. I mean, like, an honorary one is probably.
If he ever deserved an Oscar, it was for Major League.
Yeah, this is one of those.
I hadn't thought about it, that they'd work together on Major League, Berenger and Sheen.
I've never seen a trailer introduced like that, where it's more of it's teasing the director before it's teasing the film.
Yeah, well, it's telling you this is authentic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's seen things, man.
I had to write a paper on Oliver Stone.
You did?
In
wow.
my art of cinema class. We had to
Webster's Dictionary defines Stone. And
I bet if I can find that paper, it's a piece of shit.
You'd think so. Remember when I dug up that Jumper preview? I'm like, well, that was too much effort to write eloquent words about the Jumper video game.
But it was like art of cinema class, and it was like you have to pick a director and watch three movies and then write about their style.
You picked him?
And I don't know how I arrived at Oliver Stone, because I had to watch, man, what's the Jennifer Lopez?
U-Turn.
Mm-hmm. This probably, and Any Given Sunday.
Any Given Sunday, that
probably
counts.
Probably watched all those, and it's just like,
interesting.
I forget what symbolism is. I'll just put the symbol in this shot with you. Here is Al Pacino screaming while we superimpose a football trophy behind his head. He's thinking about the trophy right now. I know.
That tight end's got a great ass!
But yeah, the Platoon, everybody.
Yeah.
Platoon. It's a good movie, but it's not one that's I particularly revere. I guess it's not for my generation, really.
Yeah, that's a good point.
A lot of beautiful set pieces, though. I've watched it at least twice. It's got a lot of great lines in it. I wish I could be kinder to the film. I didn't rewatch it. My bad.
I wonder, when did the practice start of putting out Oscar Beatty movies around Christmas start? Like,
according to Diana's last Classic Corner, maybe 50 years ago.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, it goes pretty far back. That's why when something that wasn't released in November, December wins, it's like a thing. You're like, wait, what?
You remembered?
Yeah, well, it's even the audience, wait, that came out this year? Because you forget, because like the season is to the 2.5 months before the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll find that out in the last segment of this show.
But the most fun, interesting movie of the week.
A little counter-programming.
Yeah. It all began in this little shop.
Ow! Damn roses!
Where, strange as it seems, something extraordinary happens.
I'm afraid it isn't feeling very well today.
No, it's not. This one.
What kind of a weirdo plot does that seem?
Little Shop of Horrors, a story about a boy.
I've given you sunlight.
All right. this movie is so great. I love this movie so much. This is what happens when you get a really good... really good visual people to make something that can hold up forever. And getting Frank Oz... it's like Jim Henson... Jim Henson had just asked him to direct Muppets Take Manhattan. I think that's his directorial debut.
Oh, wow.
And he just goes over to Little Shop of Horrors. Warner Brothers wants to make a film adaptation of a popular off-Broadway play, which every element is pretty much... The woman who plays Audrey, you've never seen her before because she played the role on the stage, and they couldn't find anybody better than her.
The path to this movie existing is so
it's very weird.
So let's go all the way back to Roger Corman.
This was a real horror movie.
This is a real horror movie that he made... on a dare that he could make a movie for $30,000 3 days.
Wow.
That's how long it takes to make the original. And the original is okay, as you know, considering
it's impossible. That's only considering relative to Corman.
Considering the limitations, yeah. I couldn't do as good for with 3 days and $30,000. No. And it's got the fun, you know, Jack Nicholson scene as the dental patient.
It's one of the. It's that's what I didn't realize because it was one of the first bootleg DVDs I saw because I think it's public domain now.
Yeah, probably.
And Jack Nicholson is in it, so you'll see it. I would see it on sale. Little Shop of Horrors. Giant Jack Nicholson face. Right. He's in there for like 4 seconds. I didn't know Bill Murray is playing Jack Nicholson's character in the remake, which Frank Oz added in because it wasn't in the stage play. And if you watch the scene, clearly it's they didn't even write Bill Murray dialogue. He just made it up. Like to get a he's a guy with a fucking teeth operation fetish. But Steve Martin's dentist, man. I should have glad if we don't have the thing to close out this segment with. That song is fantastic.
And so then let's move forward to it becomes an. For some strange reason, they decided to make it an off-Broadway musical because it's already so kitschy and fun. It's Menken and Ashman who did all the songs for Little Mermaid. That's how they got the Little Mermaid gig and brought Disney back.
I did not know that.
Yep.
And we what Laser Time did we do where we brought up the original ending?
Was that?
It was I think it was big. It was special effects based comedies talking about Ghostbusters and why that doesn't happen a lot. A $5 million. 20-minute sequence was cut out of this film because it was in the Broadway play. It ended with Audrey II succeeding and spreading and taking over New York. And it's on the scene. The scene was thought lost for a long time. You could see black and white footage or pictures of it. But Warner Brothers found it and remastered it. And like it's on YouTube.
It's incredible.
It's one of the most incredible sequences I've ever seen, period.
Especially for lost footage. Yeah. Where you're like, I don't know that I would have liked it more as the ending of the movie.
The movie is a happy ending.
Yeah,
looks
that's the
great.
Strange thing is that this is like one of the only times where studio tampering actually works.
Yeah.
Because I think having a cheesy happy ending fits the tone much better. The original has a downer ending. The stage play has a downer ending. And to have it all of a sudden like, it's magically fixed.
This is about a giant plant that eats people, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, Audrey 2 is a plant.
A giant plant voiced by one of the Four Tops.
Levi Stubbs. Oh, that's
Levi
such
Stubbs,
a find.
The fucking for real basis for Mother Brain in the Captain N cartoon. Like, for real.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, man, speaking of cartoons, this was turned into a cartoon.
It was also turned into
one of the
ugly,
worst animated shows
ugly
I've
cartoon.
Ever seen. Ugh.
But what's the bit? Yeah, they find this plant that...
little plant, and then, Seymour pricks his finger, and it sucks a little bit of his blood, and like, feed me more,
feed me. Yeah, that's
and he's like, yeah, he only likes blood, and one time I turned to a dog, and they helped me. Sorry, wrong Rick Moranis, I apologize. But he ends up feeding him more blood, which he keeps growing, and ends up feeding him people.
Yep. And he becomes a big attraction, and things are going really well for him. The store's doing great. His life is coming together, except that he has to keep finding ways to feed meat to this plant.
And if you've seen this movie and love it as much as I do, again, the deleted ending, it ends with Seymour multiplying, becoming even bigger, and destroying the entire city of
Not
New York.
Seymour, Audrey 2.
Audrey 2. And the last shot is all of them crawling all over the Statue of Liberty with people in their tentacles.
It looks amazing.
It really does. It looks like $5 million.
It looks really nice. Great miniature work, great superimposing and perspective and force perspective stuff. It looks really nice. But I haven't watched this in probably 20
it's
years.
So, it'll never be bad.
It really
never.
Holds up.
Never.
Yeah, but musical, silly numbers, walks the line. We just talked about Mars Attacks last episode, and they occupy a similar spot in my brain.
Yeah, probably.
But this one nails what Mars Attacks is trying to walk the same line.
It knew what tone it was.
But maybe that this one had Mars Attacks needed to go serious in the same tone that this one went silly.
Yeah.
It just Mars Attacks tries to be silly
like
this.
It shifts too many ways because there's 80 characters in fucking Mars Attacks.
Yeah,
but It's a 50s style movie about the 50s with 50s musical numbers.
Yeah.
That's a dark comedy.
Which is a great period. A great, in the sentence of this year, a great period on what we've discovered. Mm-hmm. And I'd never really thought about it till we did this show. So much of the 80s is 50s nostalgia.
Yep.
And you didn't even notice till every 3 weeks. It's like, oh, yeah.
Robert Zemeckis wanted to go back to his childhood and Back to the Future, or that every Nickelodeon promo is shooby dooby dooby doo.
Stand By Me is
Stand By Me.
People of the 80s reflect.
Well, it's people our age writing stuff about their childhood.
Yeah, exactly. And then Peggy Sue Got Married.
It'll be really weird. And in a year or two, there'll be 30-year-old screenwriters writing about our childhood.
There's a show the Goldbergs that is literally 80s nostalgia every single
episode. Stranger Things. Come on.
Stranger Things, yeah.
TV this week.
A lot of important Christmas episodes that I remember, at least.
Okay.
December 16th, 1986, the Growing Pains episode The Kid airs, in which Ben Ben Seaver finds a home, he meets a homeless orphan, brings her in, and this orphan has plans to rob the Seavers. But when she sees how good of a family they are, she decides not to. And I have a little promo of that.
Aww.
It's a heartwarming holiday special.
Ho, ho, ho! Boy, have I got great news!
When a homeless orphan finds a family willing to share their Christmas.
We can give her everything, because she doesn't have anything!
Join in the true spirit of the season.
It's not what we get for Christmas, it's what we give.
A touching tale about love.
Says the 14-year-old.
Oh, isn't it beautiful?
And unforgettable growing pains.
Monday, December 24th on Cable 6.
Do we know who plays the orphan there?
Not DiCaprio. She didn't seem that famous. I did look her up, but I forget.
For a second there, I was like, is that Juliette Lewis?
No,
it's not.
But by the way, we're just watching that clip. I'm like, Ben Seaver, I think, is the star of that show. Like, he's got way more charisma than Kirk Cameron and
the dad
other one.
Or...
No, the son.
The son, the blonde-haired son. He's the middle guy, but he's the closest to, like, a normal person. He doesn't have, like, an exuberant personality like the other characters in the show.
I watched a lot of Growing Pains. Me too. I don't know if we've ever actually talked about that show on here yet, but...
Yeah. I think we're only in the first or second season of it.
Okay, that would be
the second season.
But I remember the dad who would go on to host Animal Crackers.
Alan Thicke.
anyway. If you ever need something to just make you laugh for the dumbest reasons ever, Alan Thicke briefly had a failed talk show called Thick of the Night.
Thick of the Night, yes.
Try to find any time Gilbert Gottfried sings the theme song to it.
Thick of the Night!
No, it's not what you'd expect, because Alan Thicke sang that song. He had a musical background.
He did. He wrote
the theme song
to Growing Pains.
Right. Mm-hmm. So,
Robin, he wrote Burt Blood Lines.
Yes. So, yes, his imitation of singing that song. Oh my god, it's so great.
Gilbert Gottfried's podcast is amazing, by the way.
Love it.
It's really good.
Love it.
December 17th, 1986, the Perfect Strangers episode, A Christmas Story, airs.
What?
So Larry...
What is Balky's version of Christmas?
Yeah, Larry and Balky are snowed in, so Larry can't fly home for Christmas. Has to spend it with Balky. Here is a clip of the end of the episode. So to set this up, Larry gave Balky a present, which was a stereo and a Wayne Newton tape. And here's Balky's, and it's gonna make you cry, I think, a little bit.
Balky, this is beautiful.
It's a blank.
I make it myself. You made this? I started it the night I come here to America, and you took me in. And every night after you go to sleep, I work on it for 1 hour. So, happy birthday. That's what we say on Meepos. Because Christmas is not just Christmas turtles and presents, it's also the birthday of baby Jesus.
There's where I said last week, where would you see Jesus in the weirdest spot? Being talked about by Balky.
Yeah.
I didn't know Christianity was popular in the Meepos.
Probably Orthodox Christianity.
Yes.
Somebody had to invade that island.
But if that didn't bring you to tears, here's the very end of that clip because Larry is angry because he's not with his family and friends, and he thinks that's where he gets the source of Christmas spirit from. But this present has moved him so much, this is what happens.
Yes, there it is.
There what is?
It's the Christmas feeling. It's back.
Lights come back on in the apartment.
The Christmas tree just turned on.
The Christmas lights come on. It's a Christmas miracle.
No, Balky, I thought I was missing Christmas with my family and my friends. But I'm not. You're here.
Wow, and they French kiss. That's crazy.
Your best of friends making out.
So we talked a lot more about, because Perfect Strangers debuted earlier in the year.
Like third or sixth episode or
something. Yeah, it was
like
March maybe.
Man, they're pulling on the heartstrings early.
Dave sounded like Henry.
As a great example of how 30-20-10 can work, the same week in 86 when Perfect Strangers debuted,
yes.
In 96, Resident Evil debuted.
Nice.
and a Muppets Tonight episode aired in 1996.
Perfect Strangers episode. Now let's move on.
For what it's worth, I've seen Wayne Newton in concert. Moving on.
December
Branson, Missouri.
December 19th, 1986, NBC airs an adaptation of Babes in Toyland with an all-star 1980s cast. I don't want to spoil anyone who's
in it. I think
I
remember this.
Well, I know I saw
this. One person will be reappearing in 1996.
I remember
here's
this.
Here's a promo. And something about this is going to... It made me really angry. See if it ticks you guys off.
Babes in Toyland.
For a town, it looks like so much fun. This is pretty strange stuff.
E.T. star Drew Barrymore headlines an all-star cast that includes Keanu Reeves, star of the summer smash Bill and Ted's Bogus Adventure.
Everybody
almost.
Bogus
That's
Adventure.
It, right there.
Oh. That's irritating.
And there's also two more stories.
Was that him critiquing Excellent Adventure?
No, that's an idiot who didn't bother to copy, like, check the copy before he said it.
Bogus
but
Adventure.
Bogus Adventure. It's... But the Excellent Adventure, Bogus Journey.
But yeah, but Bogus Journey wasn't out
yet. It's not even out yet.
Well, so, no, this is from a few years later. Because, he wasn't in Bill and Ted by that point.
Okay, sorry.
Body Kids, Pat Morita.
Master Masters of the End of Hopscotch Lane.
And Empty Nests, Richard Mulligan.
1 week from today, and everything will be mine.
The bad guys in this costumes are pretty great.
I know, but it's also weird that you close with the guy from Empty Nest. Mm-hmm. He's the least famous of those four. I'm sorry. Even less famous than Pat Morita.
Pat Morita's way famous.
But I've never watched any Babes in Toyland. It just seems too...
I have a vague recollection of this. And I remember
totally
trying to find it and ending
this.
Up finding the Annette Funicello Disney version. And they're all bad. Mm-hmm. But... Except for the George Paul version.
Yeah.
I'll shut up.
So all these things have built up Christmas spirit. Mm-hmm. This last thing will maybe make you kind of sad because December 20th, 1986, William Shatner hosts Saturday Night Live and appears in an infamous skit where he is at a Star Trek convention.
I have the clip for you on Drive. This clip is... Do you have it ready?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is so good.
What's your question?
I wonder if you could settle a bet for me and my friends,
sure.
Okay? When you left your quarters for the last time and you opened up your safe, what was the combination?
You know, before I answer any more questions, there's something I wanted to say. I having received all your letters over the years and I've spoken to many of you and some of you have traveled, you know, hundreds of miles to be here, I'd just like to say, get a life, will you, people? I mean, for crying out loud, it's just a TV show. I mean, look at you. Look at the way you're dressed. You've turned an enjoyable little job that I did as a lark for a few years into a colossal waste of time. I mean, how old are you people? What have you done with yourselves? You must be almost 30. Have you ever kissed a girl?
I still haven't.
There's a whole world out there. When I was your age, I didn't watch television. I lived. So move out of your parents' basements and get your own apartments and grow the hell up. I mean, it's just a TV show, damn it. It's just a TV show.
Are you saying then that we should pay more attention to the movies?
No, that's not what I'm saying at all.
I've seen that clip's in a bunch of best of packages. Yeah. These are truncated. I forgot at the end. He runs off stage at that point and gets in a fist fight with Phil Hartman and comes back. And he's like, and that was my impression of a... Evil Kirk from episode.
Right, yes. Because we're not going to pay you, Shatner.
Yeah, we're not going to pay you, Shatner. But this sketch defined my impression of William Shatner. So my perception of William Shatner. And I can't prove this, but I think nerd cliches for another, like what felt like a dozen years.
Like Dana Carvey and John Lovitz, like they are almost like the Simpson nerds.
Yeah. Like the get a life, parents' basement, never kissed a girl. Like I think
those are, I don't think this defined him. I think this helped perpetuate them, though. I think that shows how old those cliches are.
Yeah. I don't know for a fact they originated here, but this was, this is in a clip package for a reason. It was like Shatner had not done this kind of self-parody before. He had been doing this at a lot of conventions at that point.
Oh, man.
But really, really funny. This episode's really good.
I feel like this is, kind of maybe inspired Galaxy Quest a little bit. Just in like how he's treating the fans in this skit. Like, that's how
there's a rebound. There's a rebound period where both he and Nimoy were like...
Because that did happen. They did look upon Star Trek with anger and kind of disdain for a while.
Not anger,
right?
But just like...
I do think this sketch colors how I thought he thought about Star Trek.
For sure.
Whereas Shatner is more like Tim Allen in Galaxy Quest, like... I'll do anything Star Trek. I'll direct a documentary about it with all the captains.
Yeah, it took them a while, but there was a good 10 years where both of them Nimoy had the I Am Not Spock book, and then followed by
I Am Spock.
But, like, I don't know. Next Gen will premiere next year in 87, so, like, that only further fuels. But he's also going to direct the next Star Trek movie, Star Trek V, which is hilariously bad. But I don't know. There is a period where, like, they just want to do anything else and are like, yeah, it's fine, but move on.
Yeah.
But also at the time in 86, there weren't a lot of things to get that obsessed about as far as TV shows went, and this thing persisted, you know, in reruns at a time when there wasn't a lot of, like, lore-based shows to be lost in. So made sense why that one was still such a big deal even in 86.
There's also, in the same episode of SNL, because I remember because Shatner introduces it, one of my favorite sketches of all time. The lost ending to It's a Wonderful Life.
No, I don't...
You don't remember that?
No.
Oh, it's so much fun. It's Dana Carvey's doing his Jimmy Stewart.
Sure.
And it's like, you know, oh, it's a... You know, I never knew I had too many friends. And everyone's bringing money to save the bank. And then Uncle Billy runs in and says, wait, I remember what happened to the money. Mr. Potter has it. And there's just this nice long beat. And Carvey just looks around and goes... What are we waiting for, everybody? Let's go get him!
Yeah, I do remember
and then
that.
They go kick the shit out of Potter.
Which is also a Barrymore.
Yep.
Lionel Barrymore. Barrymore. Drew's grandfather.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Or great uncle. Yeah.
Going into video games this week.
Gay video games?
Did you say gay video games?
I'm going into games video games.
I heard gay video games, too.
I heard gay video games.
No one has stepped on their words before in the show. This is the first time it's ever happened.
I thought you were about to slam the next title you were going to mention in like a real...
The gayest video game ever.
Well, I was going to point out that...
Superman Kisser 2000 came out.
Yeah. I was going to point out before I talked about the main game... that you mentioned Platoon rated R games, but like that was a thing at this time period in 86, 87, 88.
Not just rated R, but Oscar winning games.
Oscar winning / rated R, like Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, Platoon, Predator, RoboCop.
One of these things is not like the other.
I know, but like
Platoon
is the super weird.
That's the
it's
one.
Nothing happy about, good, let's go shoot the Viet Cong.
Yeah. Did
it's
Oliver Stone even
movie.
Agree to that? Sure, yeah, make my Vietnam
make
experience into a really fun game. Do that.
Yeah,
well,
no,
it wasn't
a,
fun, so they failed.
Yeah, it's about, you know, how war destroys a humanity in all of us.
Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah. And like, just super strange that that was happening because like, it just shows you how truly, except for Platoon, all those things were aimed at kids, despite being rated R movies that were like, no, these are for 18 and up or 17. It's like, no, you put a silver robot cop in a movie.
One of the most violent movies ever.
And a gun comes out of his leg. And it's the biggest gun that a human could ever hold.
Yeah.
And he fights a bipedal cannon-armed robot. Like, this is for children! Anyway. Kid Icarus came out in Japan. In Japan, 12/1986, Kid Icarus, called Myth of Light, came out on the Famicom Disk System, the machine that we did not get in the U.S. This Famicom Disk System is a attachment to the Japanese NES, which is called the Famicom, short for Family Computer. Japan loves its puns and shortening things into one word. So the Family Computer becomes the Famicom Disk System, little floppy disk-style things for your games. We've talked about it. Zelda debuted on it. Metroid debuted on it. And Kid Icarus. And Kid Icarus is weird in that it's a similar to Metroid and Mario, where it's an in-between, but not as good as either one.
Yeah, it's mostly a vertical scroller.
You scroll up... You just, like, guide this, and it's his name is Pit, but he is, like, Icarus style with wings and a harp and shoots arrows out of a bow and arrow.
Yep.
But, like,
a quiver.
And then you go up a lot of vertical stages similar to Metroid, and then you get to areas that kind of open up and scroll left to right, and then there's, like, castle, palace, dungeon things where you can kind of roam around a little like a Metroid, but not to that scope. So it's this weird in-between. And back in the day, it had this allure to it because it was, like, every game was so wildly different before there were numerous platformers that were indistinguishable. It was like, Metroid doesn't feel like Zelda. Zelda doesn't feel like Kid Icarus. This doesn't feel like Mario Brothers. They all were very different. Castlevania,
like,
Ninja
Gaiden. It felt like a roguelike. Like, it was being randomly generated.
It did have a weird feeling to it, and it's just not as polished. And it's this weird thing where, like, a lot of people of that era, our age, remember this game and played it a lot.
Yeah.
And then there was a Game Boy sequel years later. Myth and Monsters.
The big character in Captain N, to bring that up again.
And he was on Captain N. And
so it was Eggplant.
He finished every line he said with Icus.
Icus. Yeah. I don't know Icus. Terrible, stupid cartoon that I hated even as like a 9-year-old.
Icklatin.
Icklatin. But then there's like a 12... No, jeez.
It was
like 91 to 2013. Yeah. 2011, I mean. What is that? How much? 18 years or whatever
Something
that is?
Something like that, yeah.
For the next Kid Icarus game. Mm. Like, he's in Smash Brothers Brawl for the Wii, but like, Kid Icarus as a character, Pit, just disappeared. And while Metroid gets love every so often, Mario obviously never left, Zelda never left, Donkey Kong never left. A lot of these NES staples stuck around. Kid Icarus just disappeared despite having all the hallmarks of like, oh, this will be around forever.
I'm guessing that 3DS game didn't sell well because it's
I don't think it did.
Yeah, dude, that game had to be sold with a holder so you wouldn't hurt your hand while you played
it on the 3DS, and it was very difficult to.
And it's kind of a monkey's paw thing, like, oh, you wished for a new Kid Icarus?
Yeah.
Here's a game that is nothing like those old Kid Icarus games.
Which is fine. I mean, for the best because they weren't great. When it comes over here to the NES, I think next year, it'll have Passwords, which is it and Metroid together kind of, you know, more or less pioneered the idea of having a.
Passwords are like a 30
it's like,
numeric
it is
string
like
of numbers.
16 digits long.
And did you mix up this zero with an O? Well,
too bad.
You're not getting back to that stage. Nope.
But
spend
if,
hours
you,
getting to.
If for whatever reason you wanted to play Kid Icarus again. There's a 3D version on the 3DS because I think Arika would remaster old 3DS games. I assume they did.
Yeah.
They take the 8-bit game and add layers like Sonic 1 and Outrun, which is beautiful.
Kirby Adventure and Twinbee. I play. I like those.
I think I got a copy of it because I pre-ordered.
Yeah,
the
I got. I don't know why I have it.
Yeah,
but
I think it was a pre-order.
So
bonus.
3D Kid Icarus, which is the Famicom Disk System version, so it has saves.
Oh.
So, because the disk system could actually write a save to the card, whereas the NES one, when we got it, did not have that read-write functionality, so you had to get an awful password. But
that's a good 30 song.
I
only remember one song from it.
Yeah, the title. I mean, there's a couple. Yeah. Like, the title screen is the one that sticks out in my mind, but...
I just love it because it does give you that... It kind of conveys that, like, you're flying, you're going up all the time.
So then it has this
Kirby.
And then a big soaring. And then the logo comes down from the top, and you're like, this is so different. Because, like, Metroid starts with a very, like, creepy alien thing, and Zelda starts with this high fantasy thing, and this feels like, I don't know, it's some weird in-between in both. Like,
yeah, that's one of the things that bugged me. Well, a lot of things bugged me about the 3DS game, but, like... that he has a voice and he's like this spunky little anime kid and he sings lyrics to this and I'm like, no, don't!
Wow, he does?
No, don't destroy this memory.
And then the world theme is the other one I think people would remember. This is like the main music of the game.
Yeah, this is pretty sweet.
But yeah, it's like, it's not quite Zelda and not quite Metroid. And everything about this game is like somewhere in between. Yeah. And it's like, well, we have a fantasy, we have sci-fi. There should probably be a Greek mythology game, right? Like, it's
the ending is
love
real,
Greek mythology.
It makes sense. We're like, okay, you need a third pillar.
Yeah,
you got the sci-fi, you got the dragon fantasy one. Let's have a mythological monsters game.
Yeah. Everything that was popular in the 50s. Let's just do that.
It is pretty rad. Like, I think the last stage or two where you just get the wings and fly left to right.
You
and it's
fly.
Like,
you
spend all the time like. Meticulously jumping, trying not to fall in pits, and then you're just like, fuck everybody.
Which, as a kid, I was like, he has wings.
Yeah.
Why can't I fly? I'm so mad. And it's like,
because the eggplant wizard hit you. And
you turn into an eggplant with legs. But taking us out of the 80s, 1986, music this week, Guns N' Roses, Live Like a Suicide? Live Like a Suicide? I don't know. Four-song EP before their next big hits, like Use Your Illusion and all that. But also, number one this week, Walk Like an Egyptian. The Bangles. The album was released at the beginning of the year, but is just now getting the third single off the album, which is Walk Like an Egyptian. And this would go on to become one of the most popular songs of the entire decade.
One of the first music videos I like vividly remember.
Yeah.
I'm like,
this
is pretty.
This will be number This will be number one in 87 for a long time, but we'll go out with Walk Like an Egyptian from the Bangles. And when we come back this same week, 1996.
You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
So this weekend I watched a bunch of Christmas stuff.
Oh,
and one thing that I had never seen before and didn't expect to like at all was the Nick Cage movie Family Man.
Really?
Oh, wow.
And I thought, he's in a family Christmas movie. He's going to be so like watered down that it's not going to be fun at all. But the first hour of that movie is still really good because there's a lot of Nick Cage still being Nick Cage. Like, I got a few clips of the movie just that show. This is where he's first learning of, like, what's happened. That he's in this alternate timeline.
Okay.
You mean because you thought I was cocky? I'm now on a permanent acid trip!
Wait.
Please just tell me what's happening to me in plain English without the mumbo jumbo.
This is a glitch.
Oh, man, this is so cagey.
You've heard the word mumbo jumbo before.
Mumbo, like, the contortion
mumbo
of his face.
Jambo. Like,
that's why we give him the Oscar.
Yeah.
Oh, but we still have more. Get bonus time, Laser Time's weekly full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
In 1996, Donna Lewis, I Love You Always Forever.
Man,
no.
Just picturing a sperm fertilizing an egg.
Son, this is how you were born. Let's creepily watch the footage. This song was everywhere right about now in 1996, which is a personal note only because I remember hearing this, like Duncan Sheik, and a lot of the songs we talked about, White Town, I'll Always Be Your Woman, or Never Be Your Woman. Because this is the week, 20 years ago, I got my driver's license.
Hey, good for you.
December 19th, 1996, which is also the day, I think, that VGMusic.com launched, which is a video game MIDI site where I would eventually, when I think I had the internet by now, dial-up internet in 96, and would download a lot of MIDIs. But I remember driving around and this song being on all the time. One of the most popular songs of the year. Unbreak My Heart is still number one.
Yay.
But other than that, not a lot else is happening as far as new albums out this week. News 1996, December 19th, Marcolo Mastroianni. Chris, help me out.
I just keep doing this to you.
Marcello.
I can only do Japanese names in English.
Marcello Mastroianni. Thank you.
Capisce.
Yeah. Yeah, he passed away from... the Dolce Vita, 8.5. He's a sexy Italian mofo. That's who he is.
Old age, I'm guessing.
He died the day I got my driver's license.
Man. He did. It's
your
fault.
Thanks for making
room. He died so you could drive.
God damn it.
I love him so
much. You driving in Italy? Did you happen to hit somebody?
Hey, you mowed down some grease bowl.
No, but the first time
away.
I got behind the wheel was in Florida.
As a
tropical storm rolled in and a hilarious Truman Show-style deterrent of, okay, Brett, time to go driving. Let's pull out into the street. Huge burst of wind, giant umbrella flies in the street, two bikini girls run in. It's just one of those things where the storm just happens out of nowhere. And now there's now, like, again, Truman Show levels of, all right, everything you got, throw it all in the street, in the street.
Don't let them drive.
And everyone's like, Brett, turn left, turn right, stop. And I'm just like, it's fucking fine.
And the wind blows
I'm a
off
human
the
being
tops.
Who can see objects in 3D. Like, I hit the brakes. Anyway.
Good afternoon, good evening, good night.
But also, 12:20, Carl Sagan dies.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, next day.
Transmitted into space. He's reaching the sun now. It only takes 8 minutes. Man, Carl Sagan, though.
Yeah,
didn't get to see Contact come out.
Nope.
That's next year.
It's true.
Movies.
He was so cool.
Yeah, like, I've never read any of the books.
It was one of the books I never read that sat on my shelf the longest because somebody bought it for me when I was way too young to ever be able to read it. So by the time I would have been interested, this is just a crusty thing that's been in my shelf my whole life.
So what would we say, like, famous astronomer, lecturer?
Yeah. I mean, if you saw Cosmos with Neil deGrasse Tyson, that was something Carl Sagan spearheaded in the 80s.
And the 80s one is still really fun to watch. Like, it's really all
I'm afraid. Just because, like, how much is any of it, like, has
some of it is
disproven, or
some of the science is like, nah, but then some of it was still, like, so theoretical then that it's like, we haven't proven it any harder.
If your state just legalized marijuana, I cannot recommend Cosmos enough. You feel like you're learning something, and it's just made for that.
Yeah, it's really, both of them are quite fun to watch, but. Yep. Movies this week in 96, Ghosts of the Mississippi.
Ghosts of Mississippi.
Yep, this is about the assassination of Medgar Evers, I believe.
It is.
Known as Ghost of the Past in other countries because they don't know how to spell Mississippi.
M-I-S-S-I-S-S-I-P-P-I. What the hell? It's like one of the first things I learned before I knew how to spell.
Yeah.
I don't know. But so Medgar Evers was a black civil rights activist. Mm-hmm. He was gunned down in the driveway of his home. And it took them a million, trillion, billion years to actually indict anybody.
Quarter of a century, he kept. We got a hung jury. We can't. We have all the evidence against. What his name is Byron de la
Beckwith.
Beckwith. Yeah. So it's like Byron de la Botwick on Mr. Show Racist in the Year 3000 sketch. It's named for this guy.
Wow.
I never saw this movie, but I saw. I was aware of Medgar Evers because of an HBO documentary about. And I'll never watch this film. Yep. I don't want to watch a boring legal drama. But he did get brought to justice. James Woods, too. Yep. So that's a double for me.
Yeah, James Woods in a lot of old age makeup for current stuff.
Going to jail for being awful.
Yep. That's all, you know, everybody's...
Tried by Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, everyone's a wink and a nod. And then we know who did it, but we'd just be like, I didn't say nothing. But I was... my hood was on backwards at the time. I don't know.
And directed by Rob Reiner.
Also, at this same week, One Fine Day.
I don't know why I really. I
remember.
I like this movie. Obvious, Daddy.
20th Century Fox presents Michelle Pfeiffer.
You're blaming your Peter Pan.
Wait, what's the name of the song?
One you're so proud of.
I know.
Friends. I don't have time for friends.
George Clooney.
That's because of your Captain Hook complex.
My what?
In a story about two busy people.
Don't. What would you do if I kissed you right now?
Who just might find the time. For each other.
Do you want to kiss me right now?
I wouldn't
now?
Have mentioned it if I didn't. One Fine Day.
I don't know, at the time, I remember being attracted to movies that took place in one day. So there's just a bunch of random happenstances that occur between George Clooney and Michelle Pfeiffer, who are single parents who, you know, hate each other.
All right, I'm glad there's a reason that it has a name, not just to shoehorn that song.
No, it all takes place in one day. And I remember, this is not the kind of movie I liked, nor like now. Yep. But I love it that Michelle Pfeiffer... top villain over George Clooney. We mentioned her first.
I remember this is Clooney's kind of early... It's one of his early stabs at movies.
It's the movie made after The Peacemaker, which I remember for some fucking reason.
Starting to dip his toe outside of the ER door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had From Dusk Till Dawn towards the beginning of the year, which is a niche audience, and he's like, well, no, I can do lots of stuff. Look, I can do mainstream romantic comedy stuff.
I can kiss a girl and bob my head around.
I'll be Batman in 7 months.
Come on.
But yeah, I remember it being
George Clooney. Why am I making?
No, I love.
Yeah,
George
I remember it as being. Yeah, for I don't like romantic comedies at all. So yes, yeah, a pretty good one. And just looking at the cast list, I didn't realize that one of their kids is Lil Mae Whitman.
Is it really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Lil Egg. Her.
And also out this week, my fellow Americans.
Oh, President, I'm afraid a situation's come up.
Here it is.
They've discovered a cover-up.
We've had that buried for years.
Of presidential proportions.
Somebody wants us dead. When they find out we're not, they're going to come looking for
two presidents. Uh-huh. Hold on, keep playing.
Right. And they're running together.
One, two. God, that felt good.
We'll go public.
Without evidence, the people will believe us.
Why?
Because we're presidents. Okay, they won't believe us.
Ah! But James Garner, I love this brief period of like the resurgence of Jack Lemmon, James Garner,
like the odd
and
couple,
Walter
but with
Matthau.
Presidents.
They're both former presidents, and Dan Aykroyd is a current sitting president who is with Bradley Whitford as a presidential aide again. They uncover a nefarious plot with the sitting president, and they have to pretend they're dead. It's a fun sequence of them like. Trying to blend into a gay pride parade. It's a legitimately funny joke, like two presidents who end up in a gay pride parade in 96. And from the trailer, it's just like, are you guys coming out? And James Garner's like, no. He is, though.
Tell everybody. Now I want to see a Bush-Clinton buddy comedy. Which Bush? Doesn't matter. They're both great. Both be great in it.
Wow, he's flanked by Bushes.
Yeah.
It's in a Bush sandwich.
And then, man, I don't know which one to go into first of our two big movies here, but we'll start with this guy.
In cooperation with authorities, we request your assistance in apprehending America's two most wanted fugitives. Sketch artists have prepared the following likenesses. Beavis and Butthead hit the road.
Yeah. Beavis and Butthead do America.
What do you think he was promoting? They were promoting with Norm MacDonald last week, people.
Yeah.
You saw this coming.
But after years on TV, like what, starting in Liquid Television with Frog Baseball, as an animated short, Mike Judge, then leads to Beavis and Butthead getting its own show on
its own show.
MTV, which was a kind of a weird way to just show old video that they
Beavis and Butthead
old videos that they could make fun of.
True, yeah. Beavis and Butthead was my gateway into MTV.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I didn't watch MTV. I didn't even really like a lot of music. I think I had a Weird Al album. I liked this cartoon a lot, and then MTV became the only channel I watched because of Beavis and Butthead.
I think I was watching before, but not long.
Maybe
before.
Liquid Television.
Liquid Television. Only definitely. Liquid Television for me. I didn't really give a crap about anything.
And then The State.
And this is great. Yeah. I did an article on LaserTimePodcast.com a while back, according to. Like a Rotten Tomato consensus, what are the best animated films based on animated cartoons? And this is like in the top five.
Yeah,
critics liked it a lot.
What's strange is I've never seen it.
It's so much fun. It's great. It's totally great.
Yeah, it's a road movie where they lose their TV and they go on a road trip.
Which is perfect because that it's episodic, so you can just do. You know, and then they end up in a casino, and then they end up here, and then they're on a bus full of old people, and then they do.
They end up being mistaken for mercenaries by Demi Moore and Bruce Willis are in the movie. I think one of the only movies they're in together.
And they play husband and wife,
or something.
Which is like that's so old. I think they've probably had two relationships each since then.
If I'm not mistaken, other than Cabin Boy, it's the only movies to star David Letterman as not himself.
Yeah.
Because he really liked Beavis and Butthead.
There was like two people in that cameo, right? When they're around the campfire, I forget who the other one was.
Yeah, but Dave Letterman plays Beavis and Butthead's dad. It implies they both have the same mother. But the movie's really fun. It's really strange in that it is one of the ugliest theatrically animated widescreen movies I've ever seen, but it's consistent with the style of Beavis and Butthead.
That one part with the roller coaster of love, like
there's good, but it's still fun to watch. And there's that sequence that I think Rob Zombie directed where they're just the roller coaster of love.
They eat mushrooms or cactuses or something. Peyote.
That's the one. Rhymes with coyote. It's a great animated sequence, but it's unlike the rest of the film, which is very Beavis and Butthead. My favorite character. Is the cavity search obsessed Robert Stack in one of his last roles?
Oh, bless him.
Man. Transformers the movie? Yes. Robert Stack?
You are not allowed to.
All right, where's the unit?
My unit? In my pants?
Not on him, Chief.
Agent Hurley, I want you to give this scumbag a cavity search. I'm talking Roto-Rooter. Don't stop till you reach the back of his teeth.
Yeah.
Just the unnecessary yes. Why is that the funniest line?
I don't know. Whenever Butthead does that, like, oh yeah, like, it always makes me laugh. Yeah. I love it. What about those guys who were whacking off in that tool shed, Bob? I think you meant in whose tool shed they are whacking. I butchered that joke.
Don't start a sentence with a proposition.
Yes, you never start a sentence with a preposition. Anyway, cavity searches. It's this movie's really fun. It holds up real well if you have fond memories of it.
Yeah, I don't know why.
And it's, to this day, I believe the only animated movie ever made by MTV Films. But they haven't made that many films anyway.
We talked about
recently.
Joe's apartment earlier this year.
They did, and like they didn't show up again until they open up Jackass 3D. I love that. Cause I didn't expect to see them at all. And then they came out with another season on MTV.
Because
Mike Judge had a standing offer to bring them back whenever he felt like it. And he did, and no one cared.
I watched it.
I thought it was fun.
I loved it. Mm-hmm. I loved just the fact that, they don't show videos anymore. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to make fun of videos. Mm-hmm. Also, you have to buy the rights to that.
Oh, that's right. They watch Jersey Shore.
They watch shitty MTV shows. Wow. And, that's you know, great. Shitty reality shows. Like, what was it? 16 and Pregnant or whatever the hell it is. It's now I'm trying to like look for a job since I got pregnant. And he's like, guy staring out the window, and they're like, "Yep, looking for a job."
And I'm
I don't see any jobs out there.
I'm happy to announce. I meant to look more into this. They finally like Beavis and Butthead has never been very easy to get commercially. And
the DVD sets were like
there were volumes, missing episodes, not in order, and because
they completely just taking out tons of music videos.
Yes,
they'd have like three or four per
set. I don't know that they include the music videos, but they just announced a super hyper complete box set with the movie, the new season, every episode.
Whoa.
So they just announced it like a couple weeks ago. So I cannot wait to see what's in it.
This is how I saw the first KMFDM video, the Drug Against War with the crazy art style. The artist, I think, is Brute. Did all their cover album. The album art for all their covers. But like, I don't think that video played legitimately any non-post 1 a.m. slot except for Beavis and
That's
Butthead.
That's a good point, that they had a lot of videos that I'd never seen or heard before. They were the really weird and obscure ones that
The Butthole Surfers. Yeah. But if you remember, Rob Zombie is in that sequence because Beavis and Butthead made White Zombie. They did not play White Zombie on MTV. It got played on Beavis and Butthead, and Beavis and Butthead, while watching, like, this is fucking awesome.
Which song was it?
The first White Zombie break. The first White Zombie buzz clip, Brett. Don't you remember?
More human than human?
No. Zombie then? I don't know.
That was White Zombie then.
But in the history of White Zombie, Beavis and Butthead introduced them to mainstream America specifically, and Rob Zombie has kind of been kind of cool with them ever since, because I don't think the world would know who Rob Zombie was.
Man.
Neat, right?
Hard pivot into the final movie this week.
Oh, no.
Hello?
Hello.
Who is this?
Tell me your name, I'll tell you mine.
I don't think so.
What's that noise?
Popcorn.
You making popcorn?
Well, I'm getting ready to watch a video.
Really? What?
Well, just some scary movie.
You like scary movies?
Uh-huh.
You never told me your name.
Why do you want to know my name?
I want to know who I'm looking at.
Whoop!
That babe is no longer in Toyland.
Yes, 10 years ago, she was in Pimps in Toyland. Drew Barrymore, Scream. 20 years
old. That trailer
old.
Made it seem like she was going to be in a lot of the movie, but it was being pretty upfront. Like, she will be murdered immediately.
It was a great misdirect where you could... You would think she's going to die based on the trailer, but you're like, no, she's the star. Yeah. Like, maybe her and Neve Campbell are the stars.
I think she's even on the poster for it.
Yeah. Like, or you think maybe that comes towards the end of the movie.
Sure.
And it's like, nope, that's the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, pretty startling. And this movie was also, like it was such a huge hit, especially being in high school when this hit of, like, a horror movie that employs all the tropes. Well, the killers are regular people in the quote-unquote real world who are aware of scary movies and then use all the tropes to still kill a bunch of students and kids who break the rules, like don't have sex and don't do this, that, whatever, don't say I'll be right back and all that stuff. And this one was awesome. I was kind of obsessed with this movie for like a full year, and then just a year from now, Scream 2 comes out in 97, I think.
I would give this credit with revitalizing the horror genre and 100%. Entirely.
100%.
Were you with us? We watched this in the theater as a double feature with another film.
No, probably not.
It holds up real well. It's real fun. Yeah.
It reminds me, because we were so into this in Scream 2 that for 2 years, my friends and I kept trying to make a parody of Scream.
It's already sort of a parody, dear.
That's the thing. It's a parody, but like, it's still a horror movie at heart. So it's a joke, but it's like, we're also going to use all the things of the joke to do the movie. So ours was going to be... Because what I loved about the villain is... What's his name? Maskface? Yeah. Or Ghostface or whatever.
Different in every film.
That they sold that mask just straight up. You could buy it. You get a black robe and put it over you. And you're like, I look just like the Scream guy. So I would run around and we would film, and then we cast all their friends in all these roles and blah, blah, blah. We went through like 3 different sets of friends because like everyone was like, I'm not doing this anymore. It's stupid. It's taking forever. And
you've discovered why most films don't get completed.
Yes,
no matter how
it's so hard just to finish shit.
Yeah.
And we broke so many things on purpose and accidentally. The movie eventually devolved into I'm trying to kill Animal from the Muppets.
Why?
Because no one else would hang out long enough. So my friend Matt, who's been on the show, we bent a coat hanger. God. To be the thing on Animal's arm that you can always see on a Muppet, like the pole. And just him dicking around in the kitchen trying to grab things made us laugh so hard. That derailed the movie for weeks. Just us doing it and then put it in the VCR. We have to watch it. And it's just Animal's fucking arm flapping around a freezer.
Got a pretty good gobo puppet we can do that with right now.
And we were so into this movie for so long and it's fucking derailed. And then when years from now when Scary Movie comes out, we're like in the theater watching it. It's like, other than all the jizz jokes,
you can't afford that many gallons of fake jizz.
We did all these jokes, and they're just sitting on some awful high 8 tape.
You even had a Wayne sibling in your movie. I
know, there's just whoever. Anyway, I probably told that story already, but my favorite was I slipped and fell, and I hit the ground so hard that I knocked a light fixture of the basement off the ceiling, which shattered behind. And then you hear in the basement, "What the fuck?" And runs upstairs. Who did that? And here's me, a fucking 18-year-old goober. Like writhing on.
I don't think I've heard this story, and I've known you a while, but I think I've seen some of the footage.
I don't know.
I've seen some of the footage of the movies you guys shot.
Yeah,
at
some
one
of
point,
them.
And I thought somebody was in the Scream mask at some point. I just didn't have this full context that you were making a parody.
Anyway, but yeah, Scream was great.
Yeah, this is you're almost illustrating something that kind of bugs me as a film snob about this movie, and it's like, don't tell the normies our secrets.
Yes. You're giving away the formula, Jamie Kennedy. I'm glad you were killed in the second.
Come on, man. Now everyone's like, oh, I know so much about horror movies. Like, you don't know. Shit.
It's the movie that almost launched 1,000 stars, because Drew Barrymore was already a big star in the beginning, killed immediately. Yeah. Nev Campbell, Skeet Ulrich, Matthew Lillard, the guy who looks like me, what's his name? Jesus, now I can't remember. Liev Schreiber is in the film.
It's in the second one, though.
Rose McGowan.
Was he in the first one?
Jamie Kennedy.
Yep.
He's on news footage in the first movie.
He's Cotton Weary?
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy that they think is the killer?
He is. And he's
just
in
pull
the
that name
movie.
Out of the air.
And the second, I love that the second movie, the killer is Aunt Jackie.
That, yeah. Yeah, the second one was like, I had to get all knife happy. I'm like, shut up. No, you didn't. The second one, and then I saw the third one. Now there's two seasons of a show called Scream.
And then, like, this kind of launched a lot of other horror franchises.
Oh, yeah.
Like, then there was I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Yeah.
Final Destination.
Kevin Williamson brand of, new sequels. Yeah.
But yeah,
the 4 wasn't bad.
20 years old this week.
Man. Although, there is one name we have not said, and it's not Courtney Cox, and it's not David Arquette. Wes Craven, goddamn it.
Wes Craven, sorry.
Again, as a film snob, I hate jump scares. Mm-hmm. So this is not a good movie for me, because he intentionally fucks with you with jump scares. Mm-hmm. If you watch the framing of shots, Wes Craven is always leaving a bunch of empty space where you think something's going to pop up.
Yeah, it's right behind you.
Constantly doing that, and then the thing pops up on the other side of the screen.
Yeah,
so good at it.
I'm going to deliver a hot take on Wes Craven's involvement here. I think he got lucky. I think he had not.
It's the right script for him.
He had not done much in horror very well after Nightmare on Elm Street, and I think Dimension Films had a great script.
Yep.
And I think it's the script that made Scream what it was. I don't think Wes Craven's.
I think his name definitely helped. Nightmare on Elm Street guy has a new movie.
It just like when I watch his movies, I don't see a signature in Scream. I see it as a very straightforward.
Yeah. No, I think watch it again with that in mind.
I will, because I don't know. When I think of a Wes Craven film, I never think of Scream or Scream 2.
That's true, though. Mm-hmm. But I think if you gave the script to a different director, it would have been not as effective. Because he's someone who knows those rules. He fucking invented those rules.
You're right. I'll take it back. Cut that out.
I'm on it. Mm-hmm. TV this week.
Okay.
A couple of Christmassy things. December 17th, 1996, the Ellen episode Fleas. Navidad.
Ellen, you nut.
Ellen is hesitant to go on a vacation to Mexico with her friends because she doesn't want to leave her new dog alone.
What about my new dog?
Such a long way to go.
This is literally the puppy episode before the puppy episode. So that doesn't happen for another 4 months. The famous episode which comes out. That's what they call the puppy episode.
They call it the puppy episode?
Yeah. Because it was like a code name. But anyway, so that's still months away. But this, at the very end, there is a clip of them exchanging presents that hints at Ellen's sexuality.
Let's all open our gifts.
Great.
Oh, wow, the new comedy CD, Taste This by Ellen DeGeneres. What a thoughtful and hilarious gift.
Great. Hey, I got a Jaguar. Anybody want to trade a car for Taste This?
Oh, yeah. Right. I can do that. Boy, Ellen DeGeneres, I love her show. Do you think the rumors are true?
Wow.
Wow. That's pretty good.
I'm still glad I didn't watch the show, though.
Yeah.
I watched one with Bruce Campbell in it. Really? Like a cameo to his Thanksgiving episode or something. But yeah,
I saw the coming.
I mean, I do like the cast is good because of the Jeremy Piven.
I watched These Friends of Mine when that's what the show was
but
originally
also,
called.
But also, I forget the guy's name, but he's one of the cops in... that Dave Foley movie, The Wrong Guy.
Higgins.
David Higgins.
Yeah. Who's
yeah.
Just like completely waste the money of the FBI find
that
this
movie
guy.
God damn, did we talk about that here?
The
Wrong Guy's
so good. I think it might be coming up next year.
I love The Wrong Guy.
So also this week, another TV episode, Christmas-based. The Martin episode Scrooge airs. Martin is visited by Christmas ghosts who take the form of his friends, but the most important part of this episode is that Shanaynay has a famous suitor who mistakenly knocks on Martin's door.
Ooh. Jackie Chan!
What?
Christmas, man!
Happy Kwanzaa! I'm looking for Shanaynay.
Shanaynay?
Yes.
Well, Shanaynay live across the hall.
Oh, thank you. Sorry.
No problem. All right. Who is it?
Jackie.
All right, Jackie Chan! Wait a minute, don't be coming over my house out of back to leave, or I told you to page me.
Yo, what are you doing seeing Shanaynay?
Well, anyway, come on in. How you doing?
He's Capper.
Shanaynay must got the ill nana.
This is the 90s, right?
Yeah. Music. Then it goes into the intro,
dude. And this is why Jackie Chan has an Emmy.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
And Martin is acting a little ribald, like Bart yeah. said.
No Didn't doubt.
He just got an honorary Oscar or something.
Jackie Chan got an honorary Good. Oscar this year. He freaking deserves up Wonderful up there
man.
With also him and Frederick Weissman, who's like the father of the modern documentary.
Really?
Yeah. The idea that they're together, that's adorable. Also, did you notice the what's her name who plays Gina? Going back a segment Campbell. Is one of the yeah. the three singers in Little Shop.
Oh yes, really? That's right.
Yeah, the ones that have they're all named after girl groups. It's like yeah. Crystal, Vandella, and
Supreme.
And yeah, Shangela. I forget
the one of the other doo-wop singers in that movie is Gina's
doo-wop
friend.
What singers?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Doo-wop. and let's move on.
You heard
to,
what he said.
Last but not least. December 18th, 1996, the TV movie "The Munsters: Scary Little Christmas" airs.
I totally watched this.
So, of course, they're not going to get the original cast back; they're all old.
I remember them constantly trying to make the Munsters reboot work. It never could, and it's Fox, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
and they would just keep making TV movies with them.
So, Sam McMurray is now Herman Munster.
Oh, that's not bad.
Bug Hall, who was Alfalfa in the Little Rascals movie.
Rascals?
Yes, he played Eddie Munster. I forget the name of the actor, but Krampus or Clampus from Seinfeld, like the evil guy at Jerry Seinfeld's dad's retirement place with the pen.
Oh, take the pen!
Yeah, so he's Grandpa Munster.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's
and,
pretty good.
I have a clip of the special, and the premise is that the Munsters have moved from Transylvania to L.A., and Eddie Munster is homesick around Christmas time, so they're trying to figure out how can we make Eddie Munster happy for Christmas.
Eddie's homesick for Transylvania. I say we invite the family from the old country and throw a big Christmas party.
Now we're cooking. Lily, any ideas?
The reason L.A. doesn't feel like home to Eddie is because he's alienated. He needs to get involved. The Homeowners Association is having a big holiday decorating contest. I'm going to enter us and get Eddie to help me. That way he can feel that he's really involved with something.
Give me that chore. You people are making this so complex, so psychological. All Eddie needs is snow.
That
All Eddie help. Needs is an old-fashioned Transylvanian white Christmas.
Even there's, Transylvania gets
There's
in the business.
Nothing in that clip that should be bubbling.
And also that they have to write on the chalkboard for every plan. Wow, they are literally just writing the name of what they... Community!
I will give her
family.
Credit for acting, reciting the line
while
writing the word community, which she never said.
Yeah.
Like, as a take, that has to be remarkably hard to deliver a complicated line with emotion and intent while writing a completely different
it's
word.
It's a long word, too.
That sounds difficult to me.
And that's it for TV.
Man. Video games this week. Our UK listeners will be able to weigh in more on this, but Terranigma is a...
What'd you just say?
Pretty famous...
You ran Dave today.
You heard what I said. A famous action RPG that released in the UK and elsewhere, but not in the US. It's part of the whole... If you play Illusion of Gaia, or I think Soul Blazer, these are other RPGs, action RPGs that were... pretty reasonably good, but Terranigma is usually held up as like the best one, and it, for whatever reason, even though there's an English localization, came out in Europe, it didn't come out here, and it's been one of those sought after, like, man, that has still never come out here legit, and because of that, I've never played it, and I just don't know much about it, but it is, feel free to, you know, in the comments on 302010.net, where I post the episode notes and all the stuff that we talk about, and people comment on the show, if this is probably a game that you know, and you've played, so please hop in and chime in on it, because I know it's important. I just don't know enough about it other than that it's a great action RPG. Also, this week in Japan, this week period is what is considered Mega Man's birthday.
Really?
I worked through several of them. But Mega Man 8 came out in Japan this week. So you see a lot of December releases for Mega Man 8 came out in Japan. It's the start of an era that
96?
Lasts...
Oh, sorry, yes, 8, not 9.
Yeah, 96. And then Mega Man 9 comes out in 2008, or 2009, I should say. It was announced in 08. This is the start of an era that lasts about 5 years from 96 to 01, 02, where five different versions of Mega Man are all happening at the same time.
Mega Man, Maverick Hunter.
Oh, that's even after that. There's Classic, there's X, there's Legends, there's Zero, there's Battle Network. All happening kind of concurrently or within mere months of each other. Like, Legends 2 is 2000, but Tron Bonne is after that, which is a spinoff. And Zero is 02. Mega Man and Bass comes out. Like, it's just like, there's so much congestion of this brand in just like a 5 to 8 year period, which naturally leads to a rather famous and, like, to this day, still rather long absence since Mega Man 10 was 2010. And it's now 2016. And we still
always say, if you're hankering for a Mega Man enough to complain to a complete stranger, you got, like, 90. I bet there's 90 you haven't played.
There's a lot. But Mega Man 8 comes out later in the U.S., so we'll talk about it more
I
then.
I still love Mega Man 8.
It's a problematic phase, we'll say.
Mega Man.
There's a lot to talk about when it gets localized, or if you want to call
it... Go away, Bass!
If you want to call that a localization.
Maybe.
But we'll go out with one of the tracks from Mega Man 8. It's a good soundtrack. But when we come back this same week in 2006...
Ships at sea. It's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth a watching. And for the week of December 16th through 22nd, it's definitely not as crazy as last week, where there was everything under the sun. This week, it's pretty much all just from 50 years ago, but there's still a lot of it. From England, we've got, well, I guess it's English, for a good swing in London film, Blow Up, by Michelangelo Antonioni, which I really enjoy. It's about a photographer who thinks he caught evidence of murder, and there's stuff going on, and etc. There's also The Sand Pebbles, which with Steve McQueen, which is about folks on a ship during beginning of World War II. It's been a while since I watched it. I thought it was okay, but not spectacular. Now, here's a trivia question for you. What does Austin Powers have to do with Kingsman the Secret Service? The correct answer is Michael Caine wearing square glasses. That's because, and I don't know why it sort of has been forgotten in America, but it's still pretty popular in England, Michael Caine had a series of 3 movies where he played Harry Palmer, a spy for MI5, kind of like James Bond, but it's supposed to be like the thinking man's James Bond, so it's more realistic and grounded and sort of more like a John Le Carré kind of thing than wacky James Bond with action and shooting and craziness. So there are 3 of these, and the second one, A Funeral in Berlin, is out this week, 50 years ago, directed by Guy Hamilton, who also directed a bunch of Bond films, including Goldfinger. I watched all 3 of them for you, and Funeral in Berlin was really, really good. Ipcris File, the first one, is probably the best, but it's really slow and twisty-turny, and a lot of characters you have to follow, and... Michael walked in while I was watching it and he said, "What's it like?" And I said, "It's like James Bond does paperwork." So Funeral in Berlin, I think, is way more accessible, way more interesting, but it's still lots of double and triple crosses, and it's all, like, filmed in East Berlin and West Berlin back when those were things, and it really, you know, a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. And then, speaking of James Bond, there's also Murderers Row came out 50 years ago this week, which is the second Matt Helm film, which is Dean Martin as, like, a parody of James Bond. We've already been through a ton of parodies of James Bond. I do not care for these. These are too cartoony and goofy. And then, if you're into cars, I definitely will recommend Grand Prix, directed by John Frankenheimer, starring James Garner, that we just talked about in last segment, when he was old. But when he was young, he's really... This is a really solid car racing movie. I totally recommend it if you haven't seen it. And then last but not least is the 50th anniversary, December 18th, 1966, the TV debut of Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas. This has already been broadcast again this year in the U.S., so you missed it. And if you missed it, you missed it. But I love this so much. The animation by Chuck Jones is so good. The fact they got Boris Karloff to do the voice, so cool. And then Thurl Ravenscroft, aka Tony the Tiger, singing the theme song. Love it. If you haven't seen it before, because you live dark side of the moon or Brazil or something, you got your own things. If you've never seen it before, I totally recommend it. As for the live action movie, I would not touch that with a 39.5-foot pole. I hate that fucking movie. Don't ever watch the live action movie. Ever. That's it for this week. Stay classic.
Furtado, Say It Right, bringing us into 2006. This was a big song, briefly topped the charts in 07, but it's all over the radio by now. It just takes a little bit to get to its, like, peak. Mm. But I remember hearing this all the time throughout 2007, 2008. Probably my favorite song off that album. I didn't buy the album, but it had numerous singles. Nelly Furtado,
I'm Like a Bird.
That was 2001. So that was a different... But same artist, yes. Beyoncé is still number one with whatever the song was. I can't remember. It's been... Number one forever.
Pushy Princess.
And Beyonce. Then also new albums from Joey McIntyre.
From NKOTB.
From NKOTB.
Pushy Princess is my nickname.
And then new albums from Bow Wow and Nas as well. But getting right into movies this week.
We better.
In 2006, The Good Shepherd?
The Good Shepherd. Robert De Niro's second directorial effort.
I think so. I watched a big chunk of this.
I was bored out of my mind.
So bored.
It's the story, the beginning of the CIA starring Matt Damon. Yeah. Yep. Didn't care for it.
Yeah, it was slow going. Mm-hmm.
And then we also have We Are Marshall.
Today. One day we're going to be like every other team. Where winning is everything. And nothing else matters. And when that day comes, that's when we'll honor them.
What day is it, son? What day? Time to play till the whistle blows.
Woo! Yeah, dog! Yeah, I had to put it in there because I know we don't do a lot of good service for sports films. I know a lot of people who like this.
Yep.
I avoided it forever because who we refer to pleasantly from my hometown is Saint Bobby. Bobby Bowden, he's in this fucking movie. Again, the whole town revolves around Florida State football, and Bobby Bowden, he has the second largest stained glass window in the country devoted to him, built into the stadium, aligned with busts of him as well.
Oh, God.
And he's in this film, We Are Marshall, which is about some stupid football team.
It's a true story.
It is a true story.
They died.
Sorry, I'm not talking about the people who died, but like the whole football team dies, and they have to like remake the football team. Is
yeah,
that
yeah.
It?
And Marshall, it's in West Virginia,
and win. And then Matthew McConaughey gives inspiring speeches like, "Enough about funerals, y'all. Dang." No grieving. Time to ween.
Funerals are a construct invented by man.
Really clean himself up and grown up since being Dupree.
And Matthew Fox, your favorite actor in the world, Dave?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The plain land.
A vantage point, maybe?
So all the everyone
of,
on the...
Of Racer X.
Yeah. Dude, he's great as Racer X.
So I'm guessing they all died in a plane crash, right?
They did. Yeah. They did.
But where did it land? The island.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Again, these are real people that I just...
Marshall Gates. Yeah. It's been 10 years. They're over it.
It's been 10 years since the movie.
All it's going to take is one football trophy, and they won it. They'll never have existed.
Everything's fine. We never needed those guys. We could win on our own.
But I wanted to make sure. I know a lot of people like this movie, and I know nothing about it. We'll never watch it.
Curse of the Golden Flower.
Yes. Bitch.
I've never heard of this. Nope.
Oh, you guys are missing out, man.
Xiao Yun Fat and another...
Is Zhang Yimou. That is the name you need to know, because he is one of our best living filmmakers, period.
Really?
Yeah.
What would I know him from? I can't ever read the titles on his poster.
Let's start with Judo, Raise the Red Lantern, To Live, Not One Less, Hero, House of Flying Daggers.
I've seen those.
The amazing opening ceremonies to the Beijing Olympics.
That was pretty great.
And he's got Great Wall coming out. The Matt Damon, is he Chinese?
I don't know. Matt Damon Saves China. I love
Matt Damon Saves China from monsters.
Love it. It
sounds great.
Shepherd changed.
Yeah.
By the way, I just realized Matthew McConaughey is not in You, Me, and Dupree. That's Luke.
Owen Wilson.
Owen Wilson.
Right. Oh, wow. Dave's retracted something.
They both mastered the lean against a woman in a movie poster move. I just mixed them up for a second.
Yes.
But what is Curse of the Golden Flower?
It's a really elaborate, cool, epic kind of Qing Dynasty movie where there's tons of action. Yes. All right, that's
its original title was Kimonos and Katanas. Now you get an idea.
Yeah, it's. I always forget if it's this or House of Flying Daggers. That's sort of loosely based on something else, but no. So it's imperial court drama with incredible sets, incredible costumes, awesome acting, and a bunch of crazy fights.
I'm just so glad we have a woman on the show. None of that is anything I would have ever praised a movie for.
Oh God. Hero? You guys have seen Hero?
It's Jet Li,
Hero,
right?
That was gorgeous. And so, he was just on a run of making these gorgeous, I guess, are they wuxia?
Epics?
I don't know. Epics, action epics, where I guess there's like a version of the movie out there you could not have any action scenes in and it would just be a drama. Or, let's go crazy.
You know what? That's a pretty good... It's a pretty good way to bridge the gap into that kind of genre for me.
Yeah.
If there were more action sequences in The Crown, I wouldn't be dreading watching it with my girlfriend.
Crown was good. Come on. It's good.
And then this
week... Yeah, those three movies I just listed, House of Flying Daggers, Curse of Golden Flower, and Hero, cannot recommend them enough.
Huh. Man, I saw Hero and I have no memory
so
of it.
So just
how I feel
beautiful.
About every Jet Li movie. Yeah. Except for, the American movie guys were in that one. They were.
So beautiful.
And then... this week debuted a modern trilogy. I think it's a trilogy by now.
All fun, aren't you, Dexter? It can get a little spooky around here at night, so you might want to put a few lights on. And the most important thing of all to remember, don't let anything in or out. Out.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What? Night of the Museum. A movie I don't have a ton of affection for, but I think I'm not the right age for it.
Yeah.
Every time I see it on, I'm like, I can see how this could be your Home Alone. Home Alone's not a timeless movie. Probably won't be a timeless movie in 5 years for anybody.
Yeah, because there's an inherent fun in at night, the museum, everything comes to life. So
great concept.
You get the old wax general can come to life. A dinosaur skeleton can run around. Mm-hmm. Like, literally anything you want could be in this museum.
Oh, well, here's your Owen Wilson. He's in this movie. Yeah, wow. And is this one of the final roles of Robin Williams in the third film? Teddy Roosevelt?
It comes out after he passed away.
And that's why the trilogy must end. No Robin Williams. No deal.
And then Ben Stiller as the...
I looked at this at the time as a giant sellout piece for a bunch of people I liked, including Ben Stiller, Owen Wilson, Steve Coogan, Robin Williams, and mainly Tom Lennon and Robert Van Grant. It was like their rise to being like the some of the most prolific... what would you call it? Light comedy screenwriters in Hollywood. The two people I genuinely love who are currently at this point, I think, still on Reno 911.
Yeah,
and like
still making new episodes
at 2006.
Oh, okay.
Think it might be gone by now.
And writing movies that I don't like constantly.
No, I mean, what was their career besides like The State, then Viva Variety, and then
I love Viva
Variety. But they're all like moderately successful shows that are this will pay for a while, but not like you're not going to get super rich off of it.
Occasionally, people show up in Drunk History.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love those guys. Over Christmas, if this is on, I'll give it another shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen most of this one. I've seen all of the second one. The second one I thought starts really strong, and it got kind of stupid and for babies after a while. But it's got a couple real nice nice highlights. Bill Hader is Custer. I thought he's great.
Oh, but, I'm in again, see?
But, you know, that's like a brief period in the movie where, well, it should be more fun. This first one, I find it, it's charming. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't imagine it being anyone's favorite movie, mm-hmm. but liking it an awful lot. Yeah. I thought it was really, and yeah, the idea of Robin Williams as Teddy Roosevelt sounds terrible. And he's actually, he's really, really fun.
Yeah, he
and charming. Screams a lot. He's got a little like implied flirtation with Sacagawea, which is like, that makes so much sense. Oh my God, yes. I'm shipping them now.
To this day.
And, to this day.
You can't do it. Mickey Rooney also gone. He played one of the guards that was changing over, him and Dick Van Dyke.
And Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, that was Dick Van Dyke.
He's still, still barely here. He's here, damn it.
He's not only here, he just did the fucking Chimney Song on stage and danced. And danced and sang it, like, at 90 years old. Dick Van Dyke.
Wow. Jesus.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Enjoy him before his name becomes illegal.
Twice over.
I mean, we can't advance anymore. They're not gas efficient.
but another movie out this week.
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Yeah. Who was the greatest?
Fuck?
Who was the best of all time? If two athletes from different eras could actually compete against one another, who would come out on top?
In one corner,
the reigning champion at Mason the Line Dixon. He'll be pitted against the former two-time heavyweight champion, Rocky Balboa.
It's such
he
a...
says the title, you win the prize.
The premise is pretty dumb already, but I really do hate the intro. It all starts Rocky Balboa, Rocky VI.
Yeah.
Because a fucking CG recreation of the current greatest prize fighter, Mason the Line Dixon.
Yeah, I guess he's supposed to be kind of like Floyd Mayweather, but like the premise is like he's fighting nobody.
In a simulation.
Yeah.
What, did Rocky lost?
Rocky beat him in the simulation, and he's like, he's also Mason the Line Dixon. Mm-hmm. He's like a champion who's not facing good competition and kind of is doubting himself, and he's like, everyone says Rocky's the best, so I bet I could beat Rocky at any point. And then Rocky retrains.
How is he the best? He got beat by Apollo Creed and like two other people in the original Rocky.
Yeah, but then he beat Ivan Drago.
That's true.
And he beat Tommy Gunn.
Every time I think the Rock, I have a tremendous amount of affection for the Rocky.
I love
series.
This series. Yeah. This is on the lower end. I don't think
that's this would have been a great sign off. And Creed doesn't really taint that, because every time I think, we don't need this, and Creed is great.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I mean, there are certain things I don't like. I don't like how they just, like, Talia Shire is just like, she died.
She died.
It's like, they Linda Hamilton'd her. Like, yeah, she died off screen of the lady cancer. Mm-hmm. That's what he called it.
Wow.
Like, you can't say, like, cervical cancer or breast cancer, whatever it is, because you're too much of a gentleman?
She died of Tanzarian cancer.
Yeah. But yeah, like, he's successful now. He owns a restaurant.
They don't exactly portray it as successful.
Well,
like,
it's
a
moderate,
dinky little restaurant that he used to show up to every night. Yeah, I did that in the fight once. Nice, thanks for coming.
Yeah, but he's not like, because Five ends with him like, he just knocked out a Don King lookalike and is like supposed to be like out of money completely. But he like, he's estranged from his son in this movie, sort of. Like, his son is resentful of how successful his father is. Third different guy playing Rocky's son. This time it's Milo Ventimiglia from Heroes.
Because he looks like Stallone.
But, I don't... Like, it's good, and it's... like, every good Rocky movie, like, it's inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I would put this, like, on the... Like, it's better than... Like, way better than 5, and also better than 3, but, you know...
Yeah, that's like, what I wasn't... Didn't mean to slam this or Creed, but now that this isn't a very nice bookend to the series, it doesn't matter at all.
Yeah, because the last scene is really sweet, because he doesn't win. They did film an alternate ending where he does win, and it's like, come on, you're going too far here.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like a bookend to 1, because 1, he doesn't win, but he wins respect.
Yeah.
And at the end of this, he loses, but like Mason the Line Dixon kind of like nods at him, and then Rocky's walking out, and he just like raises his hand as he's like leaving the arena. It's like
freeze frame.
Yeah, like that's it. That's the end of his career, and it still is, because you know, in Creed, he's not fighting anymore. He's the coach.
There is not a bad Rocky movie, but Creed does kind of...
5 is really close to it.
5 is close. I kind of feel like this is the movie that 5 wanted to be.
Yeah.
Where it's like after Rocky 4 that, you know, the series starts so serious, you know, and it's such a like quiet, independent little character movie that people always forget that's
flawless.
What it is.
It's so
beautiful.
Good.
And then Rocky 2, that's when it starts to get sillier. Rocky 3, even sillier. Rocky 4, the most of silliness.
Yeah.
And I feel like Oh, Rocky V was him coming back around and be like, I'm sorry we got so silly.
Yeah.
We can do serious again, guys. We can balance it. And
not even
going to
see a boxing ring the whole movie.
Just failing.
Last fight's going to be in a street.
It's like, you think it's stupid to be like, go back and try again? And it's a bad idea to keep trying? But it does a good job on this one. It's getting that seriousness back.
By the way, Rocky IV is not the best Rocky movie, but it's the most Rocky movie.
Yes.
And we did do a commentary on that a while ago.
I forgot about that. Patreon.com/laser.
This is also notable because I think within a year, and I forget which direction, I think it's next year, that we get... Is it called John Rambo, or is it just Rambo?
Rambo. Just Rambo.
Yeah, so it's again like simple. Like he brings back these big characters and uses the most simple title possible.
Mm-hmm. Two Simpsons jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Rocky V plus go. Rocky 2 makes Rocky 7 Adrian's Revenge. And Rocky 7 would Creed. Be Creed.
Yeah.
Creed.
And Adrian does not get a revenge. Yeah. Unless he does get cancer in the movie, so maybe she did.
Maybe that was it.
She talked to the cancer fairy.
Yeah.
The one that gave her the lady cancer.
And then that also makes when the Simpsons gag Star Trek 12 so very tired turned out to be In the Darkness. Yeah. I just love like all these jokes they made in the early 90s. I'm like, most of those gags became real movies. And I'm curious if there's any others. Those
that's
always,
one of the most promoted things in my Facebook feed. Shit that Simpsons if it became true, and yes, I'm aware of what they said about a certain president.
It's like when you're on the show, when you're on the air for 30 years, turns out that'll happen.
It is crazy. Even like really a CG Chipmunks Road movie, you knew that was coming like 10 years ahead of time. Simpsons. Fuck's
wow.
Sake.
Yeah. Wow. TV this week.
A bunch of shows like were either canceled or ended their run.
No.
Most of them aren't notable, really. Super Robot Monkey Team Hyperforce Go ended a 2-year run of 52 episodes. I think it was Cartoon Network, I have to assume.
The name, the name makes me tired.
Yeah.
But not Adult Swim?
No.
For some reason, I thought it was like a Seth Green joint.
Yeah. December 17th, the Showtime show Sleeper Cell ends its run after 2 seasons and 18 episodes.
Whoa.
It's a Showtime show. So
we're never heard of territory. Yeah.
18 episodes.
Yeah.
Right?
If it wasn't airing next to Weeds, then nobody cares. December 19th, the 13th and final episode, I guess the show was canceled, of Help Me Help You, which starred Ted Danson as a group therapist, but he's just as wacky as his patients.
Come on.
Yep. I remember that.
Unorthodox solutions to these problems?
Put a 10 on that circus, Sam.
Unless he was called Becker Malone, I ain't watching it. And then December 22nd, a Fox Lawyer show called Justice was canceled after 12 episodes.
Wow. I was really checked out at this point.
Yeah.
These mid-season replacements, baby.
Oh, yeah.
But some new things sprung forth. December 18th, 2006, the game show Identity premiered on NBC. This didn't last very long, but I do think it's notable because of the host. But the premise of the game show was that there were 12 people on the stage, and you had 12 identities, and you had to match them to the people on the stage, I guess by asking questions, kind of like Guess Who style. I don't really know. But
this format would eventually be adopted by everything the Jimmy Fallon show does.
Pretty
adult party games.
Yeah, but here's the host introing the game.
Unbelievable.
Is that your identity?
Oh, no.
Hello,
is this single host?
To Identity. Mm-hmm. Ever since I was in high school, I've had a pretty good eye for people. I consider myself a student of life, which is another way of saying I sucked at geometry.
Pendulum.
Thanks, Ben.
Up next on Comedy Central.
But I feel like this is the tail end of like around 99-2000, we got Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, like those kind of shows were popular for a few years, and this is like the tail end, like Deal or No Deal, One versus 100.
Well, Bio 6, it is that game show rebrand, the latest game show craze was definitely
the prime time
rebirth. I feel like Weakest Link is still to come, though.
Yeah.
But that'll be
is it
early 2000s.
No.
Yeah.
We were in 2006.
We're in 2006. So yeah,
it
we're past
time warp thing.
It is both to come and already over.
Yeah,
probably still airing in England or wherever else you want to base a Danny Boyle.
But you can tell how important this show is that they premiered it 1 week before Christmas. like most show in 2006 especially, like when you're this close to Christmas, like there's no new
Back
shows.
Back off, man. Yeah. Throw some Rankin Bass on. Go home.
Yep.
Spend some time with your family.
But there was a new episode of Saturday Night Live.
Ho!
December 16th, 2006, Justin Timberlake hosted Saturday Night Live, and one of the more famous digital shorts aired. I have a clip of that.
Of course.
Not gonna get you a diamond ring. That sort of gift don't mean anything. Not gonna get you a fancy car. Girl, you gotta know you're my shining star. Not not gonna get you a house in the hills. A girl like you needs something real. Wanna get you something from the heart.
Something special, girl.
It's my dick in a box. My dick in a box, babe. It's my dick in a box. Ooh, my dick in a box, girl. Wise enough to know when
I just was waiting for the countdown for like step one.
One. Put a hole in a box.
Oh, oh man.
In a box.
Yeah.
Dang. Put your junk in that box.
Three.
Make her open the box. And that's the way you do it.
I wonder how many Christmas parties this has ruined in the ensuing 10 years.
Is this the modern dirty Christmas song, Chris?
Ooh, oh, yeah. Maybe. I remember.
Suck my, lick my did box.
Did we talk about Chronicles of Narnia or anything like that?
Yeah.
That was, last
I brought
year.
It up in January because it was 05.
Well, just this created the need, or the, not the need, but like the treaty with YouTube.
Yeah.
Because I remember reading on a message board, like, guys, I would never tell you about SNL, but something amazing just happened. Where can I get it? We don't know. We're trying to find someone who could digitize their VHS, and then like
this will be on YouTube for a week, and then NBC.
And
it
had to spread without YouTube, and I'm looking. I wanted to see how many views this had
because this
predates YouTube.
I think
NBC
the version I sent Brett has Russian subtitles, so
but Mother Lover, the next. I don't know what the name of the duo is that Justin Timberlake and Andy Samberg play.
Lonely Island. Thing.
Whatever
Mother
those guys want to do.
Love
Mother
it.
Lover has 85 million views.
Wow.
The least popular song from these guys. Yeah. I hope they do some more. I love those characters.
Oh man, I remember this is one of those where I'm just shot up because I'm working in this office full of like former sorority girls, and I was so surprised they came in. I wonder if they were just watching SNL, not because they're SNL fans, because Justin Timberlake.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Everyone in the office was talking about this on Monday. Everybody.
Also, maybe even it's nostalgic when we used to share YouTube links via email, and this absolutely was one of them.
And we were all working together.
I gotta say, like, I hated NSYNC when I was like a teenager, but Justin Timberlake he's in that era of like Alec Baldwin, Steve Martin, like knockout the rock, like knockout hosts that every single time are hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there was like a while where people were like, Justin Timberlake should be a cast member just for one season. It would be the best. And that never happened, but like every time he comes on SNL, he's amazing.
Yeah.
That's it for TV.
Mm-hmm. And big surprise, when you're this close to Christmas, they don't release new video games in 2006.
No!
So we're all wrapped up pretty much with video games in 2006. We saw the PS3.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the Wii launch.
Drupal.
Oblivion was one of the big releases. Gears of War going throughout the year. Mm-hmm. A lot of big stuff.
Yeah. Biggest selling video game this week, I assume, is a GameStop gift card.
Yeah. But that brings us to the end of the show. You can go to 302010.net and follow along with each week's new episode. Look at the blog I put up, a little post that you can comment on, look at the notes of the show. You can also follow us on YouTube, youtube.com/lasertime, where we sometimes play the games that we talk about. We stream a couple times a week on Twitch, but no shortage of ways to interact with us or the site.
Listen to Laser Time, the show that spawned this one. It's like this, but more topic-based.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our topics will have been, at this point, Filthiest Christmas Songs, Volume 2. Volume 1 was a big, big hit. Everybody really liked us exposing all these awful, misogynistic, homophobic parody songs from usually the 90s, just whenever. Oh, I can buy a microphone and say whatever I want into it, and a radio station might play it? Yes, let me hear all of those. But yeah, I think Dick in a Box probably counts. That's your description of like, secretaries were singing that song out loud for a while. Like that song made saying Dick acceptable in the workplace.
They were not secretaries. Hmm. They were just a lot of girly girls.
Yes. Hmm. Yes.
None of them were secretaries, actually. We had a male receptionist. Thank you.
Ugh.
Freedom!
Not my America. Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
But yeah, listen to Laser Time. Check out lasertimepodcast.com. We should have stuff for you all throughout the Christmas break. None of our shows will be stopping. Have a ton of stuff.
Can't stop.
A ton of videos.
And a lot of Christmas stuff.
A little bit of Christmas stuff. I don't want to overdo it because I tend to do that.
Well, I mean, we have some Christmas commentary videos, but we also have some live Christmas commentaries that I guess we will have done by this point. Home Alone 2 and Die Hard.
We'll have completed what I consider the only Home Alones that matter. We have 1 and 2 up on our Bandcamp, lasertime.bandcamp.com.
Like the old French Stewart?
No. Batman Returns. That's a good Christmas commentary. Maybe some Scrooge. It's all available for you at the price of $5 at patreon.com/lasertime. That helps us live. That helps us eat. We really appreciate it. We can use all the support you're willing to give. I know this isn't exactly the right time of year to ask for donations, but it's I don't know what else to plug. Talking Simpsons.
The show is here because of our patrons. So.
Yes, that and Talking Simpsons, the chronological breakdown of every episode of The Simpsons. It's why we talk about it so sparingly here, because we do it for 1 hour, almost an hour every week now. Mm-hmm. It's why, I swear it's more interesting than it sounds.
And you've been in the golden age, man. You hit Monorail.
Past Monorail, Mr. Plow. Man. Really, really fun.
And if you like video games, there's Video Game Apocalypse, which is hosted by Michael Raparis. That's why I'm so quiet during video game talk, because I got nothing to say. But because he knows everything. We share a brain, and we decided that he gets all that knowledge, and I get all the boring old movies stuff. And if you want to talk about those boring old movies, I'm now on Twitter at ListenaNerd. Not Lucina Nerd. He's a different guy. But apparently he really approved when I recommended Once Upon a Time in the West. He was like, he sent me a little thumbs up. Nice. Thanks, Cena Nerd.
From one Cena Nerd to another. That brings us to the end of the show.
Oh, birthday!
Whole movie's birthday song telling us who had a birthday in this time period, December 15th through the 22nd.
Let's see here.
Luke Harper, famous
wrestler. Yeah.
Kristen Ritter, Jane Austen, Benjamin Bratt, Billy Gibbons of ZZ Top, Pope Francis, Mia Jovovich, Eugene, she's 40. Really? Eugene Levy, Mega Man. I went ahead and put Mega Man here. Going to be 30.
A robot can't have a birthday.
30 years old. Actually, this will be the 30th anniversary of Mega Man. Mega Man 1 will be 30 years old.
Don't get depressed.
29 years old. Jesus, I was like, that's 87. That's not right. 29. Anyway, now please get ready for these names who share a birthday because they have never been said in a sentence together. And as I went through this, I'm like, this is outrageous. All have the same birthday. Not born on the same, but like they would all be in the same room together. Brad Pitt, Christina Aguilera, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Joseph Stalin, Steven Spielberg, Katie Holmes,
oh my God,
DMX, Casper Van Dien, Trish Stratus, RVD as Rob Van Dam, Keith Richards, Ray Liotta, Ron White, and the famously assassinated Franz Ferdinand.
Oh my God!
If 50 years from now you could make the America version of the Expendables, that's what it would look
Can
like.
I put them on a plane to be lost on the island and lost. But also the same period: Jake Gyllenhaal, Chris Angel, Jonah Hill, JoJo had a hit this year, Dick Wolf, Samuel L. Jackson, Ray Romano, Jane Fonda, Andy Dick, Ray Fiennes, and Diane Sawyer. And now the quiz.
Wow.
That's a lot, actually.
That's a lot.
Born in 1966.
All right, so turning 50.
Yeah. Lived with Robert Downey Jr. for 3 years. Was in Fire Walk With Me.
Laura Dern?
Played himself in the documentary Rammstein in America. That's the band. He was in A Time to Kill.
Johnny Depp?
No.
Christopher Walken.
Oh, God, everyone's in A Time to Kill.
Matthew McConaughey?
No, he's just one of those people that...
Kevin Spacey?
He played alongside his father, I think, in A Time to Kill.
Kiefer Sutherland.
There you go.
Yes.
Wow.
All right, but that's the end of the show. We are going to go out with, and I'm going to find this because it's almost impossible to find because I talked about how I got my driver's license 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The first song when I got my driver's license.
Wheels?
Wheels.
Yeah, baby.
The closing song from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is impossible to
iconic.
Find.
Yeah, it's, I don't think it was ever officially released.
No.
You pull it and it's from the credits
it's
music.
It's from the credits scene to one of my absolute favorite movies, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and the best Thanksgiving movie ever.
Mm.
But we'll go out with that because when I was 16-year-old me, put a cassette into my car and drove off. This was the song that I did it to. And probably went to my friend's house and did nothing. But when we come back, the final episode of the year of 2016, more or less.
Season 1 wrapped.
Episode 51. This is technically the 50th episode. Normally, 50th episode is like an anniversary thing or some kind of milestone.
Yeah.
But when you're just chronicling the weeks, it's like, well, yeah.
We had to hit 52 or this is pointless.
Yeah. But we'll be back next week with another look at 30, 20, 10 years ago.